Welcome to the Draw.Good Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
G'day and welcome to the Draft Doctors, talking all things AFL Fantasy and Supercoach Draft all year round. I'm Doss, and this is the episode keeper coaches pencil into their diaries, or more accurately, their Excel spreadsheets, as we are looking at the best young talent for your keeper leagues. It's the 22 Under 22 show. Joining in is Jono Crockett, and of course, the statesman with his magic formula. Jono, a quick welcome to the show before we hand the reins over to the fossil.
Yeah, g'day listeners, good to be here. Stevie Fizz free, so we can say what we want and we won't be persecuted for it, so good times.
Beautiful stuff. Statesman, over to you for the 22 Under 22 show.
Well, firstly, I'll say it's great to be back and I'm glad the producers remove Steve and Cam, which was the condition of my return. Steve, because he makes way too much sense, and Cam, well, it's because of three words, George Horlan Smith. But I do need to apologise to Cam, because what I've found out in recent times is data is the US version and data is the English version. So basically both are right, but seeing the way our structure is in this country and who actually is our head of state, maybe Cam's more right than me. So I'll try and get it right today, but we are...
It's data.
Data. So that means we're on the American version.
Correct.
Okay, fair enough. I will accept. But this is Moneyball, bitches. It's a big shout out to me, as this is my wheelbag. There's no eye tests. There's no gut feel, just pure data. To qualify, a player must be born in the years 2000, 99 or 98, and therefore coming out of the last three drafts, with the oldest player heading into their fourth season in 2020. The data collects career average, season average, career games, number of tons scored, number of games where they've gone over 120, and takes into account position, potential growth, of course their age, because the younger ones won't be as developed as the third year players. But one of the main calculations is tons per games. A player must have scored a ton in AFL fantasy in a game to qualify, showing that they do have a ceiling. Because every AFL fantasy player, every super coach player, and every draft player actually wants a player that is capable on their day of scoring a ton. Noting that the data will provide a few surprises and a few players that some should say would make the list, but this is simply what the data tells us. This is not the eye test. What the data can't control is the potential positional changes or the lack of opportunities in the future within the club's best 22. For example, Ryan Clark, who was number 9 in the pre-season pod this year. Hashtag horse out. So the players on the list that qualified but didn't actually make that final little grouping are Oliver Florent, Jordan Gallucci, Adam Chera, Cam Rayner, who was actually listed at number 18 in the pre-season because in his first season, he scored 2 tons, but he has really dropped away. But as Cam has stated on Twitter, he is built for finals, apparently. Jack Bowes, Aaron Norton, and good news with him with regarding his injuries. Any of those tickle your fancy if you had him in your team, gentlemen?
Jack Bowes, I didn't mind. I actually had him down the bottom. I had him in my 22, but I think it's more about opportunity for him and the Suns growing as a team. I mean, once they become a better team, then the scores are certainly going to come, because we have seen him score before.
He would have been one of the ones that, if he was a true defender, we know he was at Oldham at footy this year, but that's not going to continue. If he was a true defender and scored the way he has, he possibly could have got it in because of the positional difference. But being a pure mid, so I've tried to transport what should happen in the future. So looking at it even as early as next year, these are the positions I expect them to have. Moving on to the
Statesman,
three...
quickly, were you saying the reason Florent missed out was that he hasn't notched a ton?
No. He qualified because he got a ton, but he's only had one score above 100 in his 51 games. So
no, fair enough. No, sorry, that's fine. Fair enough. Continue, please.
One of the main scoring as part of this formula is tons per game. So if we remember pre-season, Clayton Oliver, who is now too old to be in this list because he's a 97 born. He scored a ton every 2.5 games. So you got Oliver Florent, every 50 games I might get a ton for you. But as I've said before, players will develop later. And I use the example that Paddy Dangerfield would have never made this list. And where do we rank him in our midfielders now? He didn't score a ton for his first four seasons. In fact, there was an old footy show that I used to listen to, Footy Utopia, if anyone can remember back in those days, but they used to call him Danger Mouse because everyone got excited how good he looked at playing footy, but he never scored for you. That's what he was like in his first 4 or 5 years. It took him a long time to actually become an AFL fantasy star. And for a long time, people thought that he was going to be a really good player, but not a fantasy player. And as we know, history changed. Rounding out the almost rans is our, because I need to do the 25th, 24th and 23rd position because we got Big Cox actually does a little spreadsheet on how people have changed in their positions. So Shai Bolton got in 25th position. Bailey Smith got himself in 24th position. And Sean Darcy, who was ranked 7th in the pre-season. 7th. But, of course, playing second fiddle to Aaron Sandilands and our ex-GWS ruck forward.
Rory Lobb
this year and had a few niggling injuries at the beginning of the season. It's really dropped his averages down. Obviously played quite a few games and therefore his tons per game dropped away as well. So he's found himself in 23rd. Any of those three you guys excited about, Doss? I know you're going to say Bailey Smith, so you can talk about him for the next half hour if you want.
I'm excited about Bailey Smith. I mean,
excited. Sorry, Doss.
I think in terms of, I know this is data driven, so I can understand why he's not in there, but in terms of a gut feel list, Jono and Statesman, I'd imagine he'd be way up there for you two. Because, I mean, I think I did a little bit of a gut feel list, and for me, he's in a top 10 position for me for gut feel for future fantasy prospects.
Yeah, absolutely. He shows everything in the makings of becoming a fantasy stud, wins his own ball, gets the tackles, kicks a couple of goals every now and again. So the makeup is there of him to become a fantasy stud. But, I mean, it's his first year, an average, I think, 69. So, but still
nice.
Knocked out a couple of tons. Very nice. Knocked out a couple of tons, but didn't just quite make it into the top 22, but I'm pretty sure we'll see him next year in that list.
Although the interesting part for him is the Western Bulldogs' biggest issue is they have way too many midfielders. And as soon as Tom Liberatore comes into that team, someone's average is going down. Now we saw
Josh Dunkley.
And we saw McRae at the beginning of the year as well, pushed out to a flank role for a bit of time. So it's going to be hard to see how he pushes some of those away. So that becomes, yes, he's a quality player, but what type of role is he actually going to have? If he ends up being someone like a Dunkley, where he spends a bit of time forward and a bit of time in the midfield, so he gets that mix and gets forward status, then I really reckon he becomes massively relevant. But as you say, good first year, but data-driven. He's not pushing a few of these out yet. So we'll move on to the first one, position number 22. And this is a person that's had a bit of a drop this year. So he was 8th in the pre-season. So he is going into his 4th season. So he didn't have his third year breakout because he only averaged 71. He scored 4 tons and won over 120, so he has showed a ceiling. But now that he's played 46 games, he's only scoring a ton every 11 and a half games, and that is Golf Run himself, Brandon Parfitt, if I can pronounce that correctly.
Correct. Well, I think what we will mention as well is that these names are being revealed to us just as they are being revealed to the listener, so you can get our quick reactions as it happens. So Jono and I have no idea what the Statesman's data-driven list has come up with. But for me, Parfitt still being in the list, it's not surprising considering he had a much better year last year than he did this year in terms of tons, I would have thought, especially some of those big tons. But I'm still pretty high on Parfitt. I mean, he pumped out a ton in the final this week too in AFL Fantasy scoring. And we are just talking AFL Fantasy on this, not Supercoach. But yeah, I think Parfitt for me, still high enough on him, but probably not the lofty heights that you perhaps, Statesman, were maybe a year or two ago in terms of his fantasy production. With Kelly and Gelwood getting a little bit older, though, I'm pretty keen to see how he goes next year, but I'm not as high, maybe same as you were before.
And we might wait till later on the list and we might come back to have a discussion about him. Moving on to number 21, someone I've been high on, someone that has dropped a few positions, dropping from 17 down to 21. But I think the tail end of the season has highlighted his potential a little bit more, and that's Andrew McGrath. So a average of 73, which is very similar to his career average of 72. And I think that's the big problem. We're waiting for this big step up, and it hasn't really happened. But he will remain a defender for quite a while. He's scoring a ton every 15 games, which probably people were expecting a bit more of, but he's only just played his third season. But if you look at round 23 and you look at the first final, I think some bright things are going to happen in his future, even though Steve is not hot on this boy or whatsoever.
Yeah, I've never been super hot on him, so I'd be looking to use him as a bit of a trade bait in your keeper leagues. He's always going to be that 75 plus, you would think, but with the 666 rule, we see more genuine wingmen coming into the game. He could potentially be one of those players that we see Adam Saad and Connor McKenna off the half-back line where McGrath has been playing, but once he builds his tank and can push onto a wing and run all day, he's going to probably become a pretty fantasy relevant player, similar to your Whitfield and McCluggage types, where he doesn't get a lot of tackles but builds his score through possessions and marks. So even though he's probably going to leave this list in a year or two, there is high hopes for Andy McGrath.
There is no doubts about that. Moving on to number 20, and this is from a club that brought some new talent in this year, and this one started the season pretty well. First season of AFL football, getting 21 games, an average of 67, but did score 2 tons, so therefore giving a ton every 10 games, and also having that forward status, which will remain. You think that he's got a pretty bright future, and that's Grian Myers.
Grian Myers. Wow, that surprises me that he's up... Even in this list, because I don't think I'd be super hot on keeping him if I had a better, slightly better option. You know, if you had a Bailey Smith versus a Grian Myers, for instance, that's a no-brainer for me. That's pretty surprising. I think Steve often talks about, you know, players that are forwards that sort of benefit from being in a good team, and I think Grian Myers is one of those players. But hey, he's been a real... obviously a great goal kicker this year. He managed to kick goals all the time when he was playing VFL the year before as well, so clearly just has a nous for kicking those snags. But as a fantasy scorer, I don't see too much upside because there's no ability for him to move into the midfield in the future, I don't think, either. So he's probably just going to be your stay-at-home small forward for years to come, and whether there's that much ceiling in that, I doubt it. So not hot on keeping this guy, that's for sure.
Mind you, in saying that, only his first year of football, and for 35% of the games, he scored more than Luke Dalhouse.
So, yeah.
Sorry, Sorry, Kemp.
Dependent on your league too. We will say, like, a lot of this is dependent on your league. We are sort of talking from a perspective of our keeper league that we run, the Draft Doctors Keeper League, which is what, 12-team, 12-keeper sort of thing. Yeah, what would you think, Statesman? I mean, for me, he's not super. I'm not super hot on him, you know.
One thing that people don't really know, that he was an absolute ball magnet through his talent career, his junior talent career. And effectively, in his last year of that program, made the decision, because people were saying at the end of the day, players that rack up a lot of footy in the midfield are a dime a dozen. So what can you do that can set you apart? Because he's not the tallest option. He's not the upscale, big-bodied midfielder. So he concentrated that year of developing himself as a small forward. So what he actually has is that true capability of being able to run in the midfield and rack them up. So I would probably only keep him if it's a deep keeper league, to be honest, because small forwards are always risky.
And he's playing in a Chris Scott team, so he's not getting in that midfield.
Yes, very true. Moving on to selection 19, so another one that has dropped. And when we say they're dropped, they've gone down the ladder. You've got to remember all the older ages, so the 97s have been pulled up. So if you're going down on this list as you're getting older, it's actually not a good sign. It means you've probably dropped your average from the previous year. And number 19 has done a bit of that, has got some potential but got some limitations as well. Out of 56 games, has scored 5 tons, averaged 75 this year, but as a midfielder only, averaging 75, you need to find out where there is going to be some true upside. And his role changes, and so does this team, and he was dropped this year, and that's Sam Powell-Pepper.
Been waiting for this guy for a while. We've seen glimpses, but I think the role isn't there, especially he's been pushed out of that midfield with Dan Houston coming in ahead of him now. But there is a little bit of light at the end of that tunnel with Rocky getting older. Robbie Gray is now in the third. They're both in their 30s, so not going to be around for much longer, but I'd still be keeping him because we've seen him score the tons. We've seen him go in the 130s.
And I think with Powell-Pepper, at the end of the day, he has got some real tricks, and it's pace. It's the big body midfielder. But I think with him, it's his disposal. So I don't think he's ever going to be a great super coach player. So AFL Fantasy is his go, but it's his disposal that needs to clean up before he get more solid goes in the midfield. So I'll move on to number 18. And this person has got some fans this year, and it was great to see the data suggested that he should be in there as well. But number 18 is a defender, scored 3 tons out of 25 games. In other words, he's a defender scoring a ton every 8 games when he's young, is very promising. And that is Josh Battle from St Kilda.
Wow, I'm very happy that he's made the list here. I'm pretty keen on him as a prospect going forward. So in St Kilda's team next year, I think we'll probably hopefully see a much improved St Kilda. We don't know how much improvement's going to be there, but certainly some. And under your boy, Jono the Rat, he should bring out the best in Josh Battle. So yeah, I'd be keeping him for certain. And I don't think he's got really that high an average next to his name. So potentially flying under the radar a bit too, Josh Battle. So even maybe a buy low candidate heading into next year, I would say, as well as I'd definitely be keeping him going forward. I wouldn't expect the ceiling's the tough part for Battle. I mean, you know, he's more of a key defender sort of size. So, you know, I'd be thinking it would be more like a Hurley type ceiling for Battle than more than anything, really. But I'm still keen to keep him and see how he goes next year.
I think one of his real traits is he's the intercept marker type. So if they end up having 2 stopper defenders, or 1 key stopper defender and 1 mid-size that can do a bit of both, and he gets released as that intercept marker, and he's got great disposal by foot as well, so therefore the key user coming out, then I think owners are going to get some real rewards. But it is structure, but it is a little bit like your Callum Mills. So Callum Mills, when he's playing that releaser role, looks fantastic. But as soon as they've got one or two defenders out and he has to close down, then he can actually pop out a 30 or a 40 for you, which is devastating when you're trying to get enough wins to play finals. We will push on to number 17, who's a teammate and had a really good second half of the year. And during the second half, he did pump out 2 tons. We've been waiting for a bit of time. There's been a bit of criticism over pick 7 and pick 8 that St Kilda picked up. And Hunter Clark has certainly impressed some, and heading into his breakout year, his third season, he certainly planted some seeds. Currently a defender, he may keep that for next year, but obviously there were signs that he is going to be a midfielder longer term. But did, with a slow start, but did average 78. So you can see that 80 to 85 average popping up next year. And if he really does break out, 90 plus. Hunter Clark, number 17.
Wowee, Stevie Fizz will be annoyed that he's not top 3. But yeah, Hunter Clark is going to have a massive season 2020. It's Hunter Clark season for 2020, even for your single season league. So yeah, you'd be foolish to be dropping Hunter Clark now. Buy low, get him any way you can into your keeper leagues. He's actually, I'm pretty positive he'll be a defender because we were charting the CBAs and he actually didn't really spend much time at all in the midfield. So that's sort of more just appearance-wise, maybe a little bit around the ground. He attended some stoppages, but in terms of centre bounce attendances, he was lining up in the back line a lot of the time. So there's even more scoring upside for Hunter Clark if you look at that, if he does get a run in the midfield. But I'd be comfortable even if he just plays as a defender, because we know St Kilda have a lot of mids coming through still. So even if Dan Hand plays a little bit more next year, you've got your Seb Ross. So they've still got established mids with a bit left in the tank. Still super happy and super high on Hunter Clark for next year and obviously into the future.
Is it the potential that Hunter Clark in redraft leagues has actually picked up too early because of the hype that's going to come with him?
Possibly, but it just depends at what ceiling and where he goes in drafts as well. Like what would you call too early, I suppose, would be what we're talking. But I mean, he has the ability to put out, you know, if you're saying he goes, I think he goes 80 to 85 pretty comfortably in AFL fantasy next season, but that could be a bold statement and we could be replaying that next year on the You Suck show. But I think that 80 to 85 is like almost what you'd expect, and he could go even higher should he hit his ceiling next year. But I think there's going to be a lot of salary cap hype around him as well, probably, if he shines in the JLT.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking he is actually a D3, so I'll be very comfortable if he's my third defender. Mm. I'm just a little bit fearful that people might get him as a late D1 or a D2. So if they see the sort of big 4 or 5 go, do someone jump at him being the 6th or 7th defender picked up?
Yeah, it's going to be tough in your in single seasons and that in the leagues, but hopefully in your keeper leagues, you've got him on board for next season, and the average next to it, next to his name, still not sort of, I mean, obviously if you're in a keeper league, people are going to be switched on, but if you can snaffle him up, I'd certainly be doing so.
So he's definitely a keep, isn't he? I wouldn't even try to sell him, to be honest.
No.
Okay, next cab off the rank, number 16, is my boy. Don't pay the Perryman. Harry Perryman.
Yes, the Perryman. We will say Jono's dropped out of the call for quite some time now, so I'm having to shoulder the load here. But maybe, Statesman, I will get your opinion based on the numbers and what your gut feel is going forward for Harry Perryman, seeing as he is your boy.
Yeah, being a defender, and he will retain that, I'm excited about Perryman because he is an absolute jet collector in the midfield. So what I'm hoping for, or what I was hoping for at some point, he's the defender that's sitting in your team, and hopefully he then spends that 12 months in the midfield racking up the big numbers while you got him as a defender. For a keeper, I'm a little bit unsure, but let's face facts as well, that we actually look at him and say, Harry, you have got so many people challenging for that midfield spot. You're a halfback flanker. So still be creative. You might get some time through rotations, but at the end of the day, he keeps his defender status while he ends up being that D4. Because that's what I sort of think he's at the moment, is the 75s to 80s rather than the 80+. If he actually gets genuine mid-time, rolling into his fourth season next year, then the sky's the limit for him. So he's one of these players that can easily go and pump out 150 at NEAFL, and I know that's not the hardest competition to score points on, but those that are quality players, which he is, hasn't got lightning pace or anything like that, but he's a poor man's Taranto, for want of a better term. So while he's got back status, I think he's really relevant. He got some good opportunities this year. I think there'll be a few players slowly moving out of that club, and more opportunities will come. While he's got defender status, he'll be relevant.
What I'll say is he's a safe keeper. Like I think it's a low floor, but it's also a high floor and a low ceiling for Perryman. Yep. Like, he's a safe keeper, but you don't expect you're going to get massive return in the future unless something pops up where he gets that incredibly fantasy-friendly role. I'm on the same page, 100% agree.
Yep. 3 tons from 30 games. That's a good start to a career. Next up, number 15, is a man that we expect to really break out next year. We think it is his season. There's no doubt about that. 38 games, only the 3 tons so far, but the back end of the season showed some real growth, and I think he's going to be an absolute jet. He's only got a career average of 68, but I think there's big things for Andrew Brayshaw.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we're all on Brayshaw here at the Draft Doctors. Interesting question. Is there a chance that he might be able to sneak a forward status this year? We do know he bobbed up and kicked a few goals. So if he's got forward status this year, then he's really going to elevate up in terms of being drafted. And there could be a midfield spot for him. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with the new coach. They don't have a new coach right now. And you've got to think, they're in a rebuilding phase, so they're probably going to play all the young kids in there, get Reece Conker out, and give it all to Andy Brayshaw.
Certainly could do. Time to say goodbye to the Conker.
Yeah, I doubt he's going to get forward status. Moving on to number 14, who's moved up the ladder from 21 to 14, even though he had a bit of a mid-season break, but he's shown us enough, 34 games for 3 tons, and an average this year of 81. That's Jaden Stevenson.
It's not surprising that he's in here, but once again, now I think we had the conversation last time we did this list. I am a keep for this, of course, as a forward, and obviously you might have actually been able to, I sort of feel like I did a little bit of a buy low in my keeper when he had that suspension, because I mean it's one of the unique situations where he's out for a big stint of time but didn't have any injury concerns or anything like that, so it was kind of a great buy low opportunity if you had a bit of a wasted season like I did. So Jaden Stevenson, keep him.
Sorry,
if you can.
Sorry, do you have any season that's not a wasted season?
Yeah, fair enough. At the moment, it has been a rough start to my keepers at the moment. But Jaden Stevenson, I don't know when that midfield time that you... I think the reason you sort of flagged him as a keeper and a high prospect keeper in the last 22 under 22 that we did, I think Cam sort of more was high on this in him moving into a midfield role, whereas I just think he's way too good as being a forward. He's like that Toby Green. He's not the same player, but he's just a player that can just snag goals whenever you want. You've got a lot of guys at Collingwood still in their prime. Young guys like Taylor Adams is still 25, so he's got plenty of time left there. So not high on him going forward as a huge ceiling, but as that consistent 80 to 90, maybe more if he becomes a better player, as we expect he will as he gets older. That's sort of a forward, but never that really huge scoring mid, unless maybe in 5 years' time when that slot opens up.
Yeah, I think he's going to be more of a forward, which is a good thing as well, because obviously he's going to keep forward status. So he's got the potential to go big. May hurt some games, no doubt, with a really good, tight, quick defender. He might get a low score, but he's got certainly the prospect of having some massive games. Number 13 would make Stevie Boy reasonably happy. He's only played 19 games, but he's given us 2 tons and 1 massive game. So he showed a massive ceiling, average of 88 this year, career average of 76. He is a mid only, and he is the top age, but he wasn't on this list previously, and that's Will Brody.
Yeah, we have seen he has a massive ceiling, and one of Steve's loves Charles, loves the bloke, but games played is a massive issue. In, 2 years he's played, I think, 18 or 19 games, only 8-8 the last 2 years, so...
Just be careful with that one, though, because you've got to remember that to get a game at Gold Coast, you need to be an absolute gun. It's hard to get in that midfield.
But if you're getting dropped from the Gold Coast, you're not doing something right either. But he's certainly a keep for me. I mean, if Stewie Duke can pull his head in for whatever reason, might be training, not doing something right at training, whatever. But yeah, he's certainly a keep because we know the scores he can build.
Yeah, no doubts about that. Moving on to number 12, and he was a bit off the chart at the beginning of the year at number 28, but he's had a very good season, averaging 80. Has forward status and will retain that, with the potential of down the track actually getting defender status with what we saw at the end of the year might be the case. 6 tons and shown a massive ceiling with a 120-plus game as well out of his 63 games. So he's got a fair few games in him in the first 3 seasons. And I've got no doubt as this team gets better, so will he. And it's Sam Petrevski-Seaton.
Okay, Sam Petrevski-Seaton's an interesting one for next year with the return of Sam Doherty, if he remains in that half-back role as well, and if Sam Doherty returns to really good form. But I think from now, I don't think there's going to be many players that we're going to be saying not to keep and not to sort of really hold on to for next season if you do have them in your keeper leagues. But I would be holding, and I would be expecting defender status. Are we going to get that straight away, Statesman, next year?
No, so we're only talking, it was the last 3 or 4 games. The majority of the season he started on the half forward flank, so have forward slant, forward mid status, and if he's got forward mid status, he's not going to add defender as the third one. That's the reality, but there is the potential for 2021 if he keeps that role. So whether they were testing him out or whether he was just filling a role for the team, we know Doherty's coming back, but we're also losing Daisy out of that defensive structure as well. So does Doherty just take Daisy's position and then Petrevski-Seaton just remains a half-back? Look, he's very skillful. That's what they like. He reads the play really well. So he's a plus-six type of guy. And in defence, he's the type of guy they want the ball in his hand. So he's shown that he was quite creative there. Obviously, he's got the potential to go through the midfield as well. So basically, he's one of those players that can play anywhere. That can be generally a good thing, but at times when clubs are needing roles, can be a bad thing. So we saw round 23, he just didn't get anywhere near the footy. I think he got a 36 off the top of my head. He was in my Keeper League grand final team, and I just read the tea leaves with the matchup and actually put him on the bench, not even on the emergencies, and he scored a 36.
potentially one to look forward. Now, this would be looking 2 years down the track, seeing as Simo re-signed for next year, but could he also be one that we look at in the future if he continues to play in defence? Maybe that kick-in role goes to him as well with the nice kick you're talking of. So, yeah, pretty high on Sam Petrovsky-Seaton, but I'm also just looking to next year is going to be a very interesting year for him in terms of where his ceiling can get to in the fantasy scoring. He has gone big, but can he maintain a really solid average for a whole season is another question.
No, absolutely. And the last, before we have a little break, before we get to the top 10, this gentleman actually showed a massive ceiling this year. I will say it's dependent on the role and opportunity that he gets, but he can go big. So we're talking, he's played 31 games, he scored 5 tons and 1 score over 140. First year, only 6 game, he was a premiership player. It's Jack Graham.
Yeah, a lot of love for Jack Graham. Seeing he can build the score, I think when Richmond had Martin, Cochin, all the big guns out, he jumped in there, went massive in round 22, I think is when he scored that big score. So he's still pretty young. Cochin's getting older. I can see him just moving straight into that midfield and going to be a scoring beast for many years to come, so certainly a keep for him.
And Doss, do you think he's a best 22 player and they've got everyone available?
Gee, that's a tough one. I mean, he's playing finals at the moment, so is that...
So people will say, even only his first year, but people say Ross is ahead of him. Jack Ross.
Yeah, okay. It's the fact he's playing in this final series is a positive factor, but I just wonder when the fact that Presti has still got a fair bit of time and you sort of look at the way he plays and how Richmond tend to go with these like guys like Shai Bolton and like Dust. I don't want to compare Dusty and Shai Bolton, but players that can escape from the pack and really do damaging kicks inside 50. It's almost like you've got your Presti, you've got your little nugget in there. If you have Jack Graham in there as well, Richmond play a unique style of footy is what I'm saying. Like Shane Edwards has been fantastic playing a lot of midfield minutes at times this year. I think what they do will be interesting, but with Cochin, like Cochin didn't play a lot this year. If he plays a full season next year, he's one that I can't read because I was impressed with the way he looked even in the finals recently, and he actually showed this burst of speed that I didn't know he had. So he's one that I'm interested in, but I probably, to be fair, don't know enough about and haven't watched enough to really have a gauge on that.
I'm an owner, and I'm debating whether keeping him. So when I'm looking at McGrath, Parrish, and Graham, I'm leaning towards McGrath because he's defender, and Parrish because I just know he's going to play midfield. I think Graham's got a higher ceiling, but I'm a little bit unsure whether he's always going to be best 22. But if Ellis goes, as we say, they're playing a couple in there that are ageing, does it open up?
Was Graham a mid only this year, or did he have a DPP?
Mid only.
Okay.
Because I will say as well, that game that he had that monstrous outing, he actually barely attended centre bounces. He was playing as a forward, which I think tricked a lot of coaches into playing him the next week, which I think was a final as well. And then he dished up a pretty average score. So he got that score playing as a forward in that particular game.
It had 14 tackles, yeah. I do believe, something like that. So, yeah, he can really rack them up. But we'll have a little break before we hit the top 10.
Yeah, and we still are aiming for those 230 iTunes ratings, Jono, and we're so close to getting there. Not quite there, but we have had one more review over the week.
Certainly have, up to 227. It's going to take a while, I think, Dossie, to get that 230 because everyone's now moving away from fantasy football and reacquainting themselves with their loved ones and families now that it is off-season. But
foolish
RTS has left us a review. He says, great to hear that the family will continue a podcast every Wednesday over the off-season. The bye weekend coinciding with the end of fantasy football leaves a big hole to fill, but we will fill that hole. We're here every Wednesday for your listening pleasure over the off-season.
Awesome. Statesman, you will be posting this list on the website. So if everyone is listening and you're wondering, gee, who was number 17? Who was number 18? I can't remember because Jono cut out for about three. He'll have to check it out. It's up on the Draft Doctors website. Statesman will be chucking it up on there. Will that be up pretty soon after the podcast release, Statesman?
It'll be up probably Saturday morning.
All right, there you go. It looks like it is time now for the top 10, Statesman. Take it away.
Yes, starting off our top 10 is one of Jono's favourite boys. He scored 4 tons and one big one over 120 in just his first 30 games. A average this year of 86, combining with a career average of 69. So he's been a slow starter, but he's really screamed up the charts this year. It's the first time he's been actually involved in this, and it's Patrick Lipinski.
Lipinski, very nice. So I've got a little bit of stats on this one. So in the 11 games following the Dogs' round 11 bye, he averaged 86.4 fantasy points. He's a bit of a smooth mover and kind of reminds me a little bit, little elements of Josh Kelly about him. What do you think about that, Jono? A bit of Josh Kelly?
No.
I'm going to say the issue with him playing is that he's in that Dogs' sort of midfield mix, which, as we know, is pretty stacked, and they did sit pretty comfortable with the Bont and, of course, who am I thinking? Dunkley McRae. Bont was very settled in there in the back half of the year as well. But he still managed to score that 86.5 with all those guys in there. So more of an outside mid, more of a kind of wing half-forward role still. So, yeah, super high on Lipinski, but what role do you think he'll play next year, Jono?
Well, that's a question going forward. I mean, you've got Liberatore coming back. You're probably going to think Mitch Wallace is ahead of Lipinski going forward. So that's going to come down to a Lipinski, really? A Bailey Dale. Yeah, you would think. Luke Beveridge loves Mitch Wallace. Loves him. Yes. Can actually kick a goal, unlike the Dogs on the weekend. So he'd probably slot straight back in.
Has his dad got some pitches or something?
Our son, he's a father-son, so they're not going to chuck him out too quickly. But look, I love Lipinski as a player. He is that inside-outside player, can kick a goal. We know Lockie Hunter owns one wing. Maybe he can make that position his own and be that other wingman for the Western Bulldogs, which would be a pretty fantasy-friendly role going forward.
Just a quick question. Have the Bulldogs got too many of these type of players? So you look like McLean can score really, really well, but it's role-dependent.
Well, they've probably got about, I was going to say half a dozen, but it'd be closer to a dozen because there's blokes like Lynn Jong, Fergus Green, Rourke Smith, even though he plays a bit more defence, but they've all got, there's about 10 of them that they've got, so maybe some list changes for the Bulldogs going forward at the end of this year.
If they are actual quality and everyone knows their quality, then they actually become value to the list because they come an asset. So at any time that they want more opportunities, you're actually getting something back for them, and maybe that's when you can fill the holes in defence and forward that you need or want. Moving on to number 9. So we're talking a player that's had some raps on him for a few years. I won't say his third year was a breakout, but he is competing for quite a few players. He's played 54 games, he's given us 9 tons, and he's given us 1 score over 120. It is role holding him back, but when you're scoring a ton every 6 games and you're a young midfielder, you're showing potential, and that's Jared Berry.
Yeah, I got big raps for Berry. Owned him in the Supercoach League this year and was doing quite nicely until that knee injury forced him out for a few weeks. But again, it's going to be role-dependent for Berry. We did see him get the midfield time this year, but towards the back end of the year when Brisbane were really pushing for finals, it seemed like they were settled on Zorko, Neil, and Lyons as well in that midfield, with him not getting as much mid-time. And similar to Cam Rayner, we thought he was going to be something special, but he just parked forward, and it seems that now Berry's out on the outside and looking in, and he's going to be waiting for opportunity, but still think he's going to score well, so definitely a keep, or even look to use him as steak knives in a trade if you're looking to push up for a flag.
Yeah, there's a lot of good young midfielders, but this one shows a lot of potential down the track. Mitch Robertson doing a hammy, those type bring some insides outside, which gives him more opportunities. So I could see Jared Berry playing some pretty good footy and got roles, so that they respect him too. Moving on to number eight, and automatically, because he's super young, becomes one of Doss's boys. First season of AFL's footy, scored 2 tonnes for an average, obviously career and season average, of 77. And that's Xavier Dersma.
I'm glad you got me to talk about this one, because this is one that might shock you, Statesman. Not as high as some would be on the Dersma, which could be... could age poorly, to be fair. He was playing that sort of midfield role that the wing role, right, that we've sort of seen emerge as being semi-fantasy relevant for certain players and not fantasy relevant for others. But I think he's not going to retain defensive status for next year, is he?
No, I've only classed him as a midfielder, so he hasn't got any extra credit for being a defender.
Okay, so we could see him... There's nothing that won't say that he'll push up and have a fantastic year next year. But this year, he had all the opportunity in the world. And I think he's a great young player, awesome young player. But where does his scoring sort of improve? He had some really massive games this year, scoring some big scores with big mark totals. He's sort of that guy that really benefited from having just a lot of uncontested marks, which... Role-wise, I think we're going to see a ceiling going forward of someone in that the Jared Polak sort of range of a 92-95 mid, which, when they're a midfielder, isn't ideal. The upside, of course, is if he goes to that Mitch Duncan this year level and becomes that outside wing that gets those uncontested marks that he's managed to this year and goes to a whole nother level. I'm waiting to see it, but I certainly wouldn't have him in my top 10 keepers. But based on your data, he's up there.
Doss, I do need to really talk to you. You're sounding a bit like Cam and Toby Green. I was almost just about to say Xavier Dersma's a fucking gun. Now, I just point out, you say, where's his upside? So Hugh McCluggage's first year, he averaged 61. Xavier Dersma, 77. The thing that you're going to see time and time again with Sam Walsh and Xavier Dersma is their running capacity. Mm. As first pre-season, those two have got one of the biggest two tanks in the competition. So they actually showed some data, and two of the top 10 runners for the season were two first-year. So you want to know where his growth is. It's learning, and obviously if he's got such a tank with limited pre-seasons, he's only going to build that. So he's obviously got the capability, but he's also going to learn where to run. See, that's what happens if you get really good coaching, Doss. Maybe you haven't had this in your time, but actually learning where to run and where to use. They want the ball in his hands. They will teach him where to go. There is upside. There is very rarely, and I think off the top of my head is Steve's most favourite player who won the Rising Star at Frio and then went to GWS.
Jesse Hogan.
And then went to Colton, GWS.
Reece Palmer.
Correct. Reecey Boy is one of those few players that actually played their best season of football their first year. It really happens. But when you see class like this and the running capability like this and the way he uses it and the way he does the bow and arrow, I mean, things can only improve, Doss. But I can't wait to use that call on You Suck Show, but it might need to be in about 4 or 5 years' time. But by that time, you won't care because you'll be too old for you.
I'll just flag, next year, if you're expecting a massive bump from Dersma, you've just said why I don't think he'll have a huge bump next season. Season, like, career-wise, I said I don't know whether he'll be the Polak or the Duncan, which it's going to be one of the two. And if he goes the Duncan, I'm going to look like an idiot for saying anything negative about him. And he could become the Duncan.
What's wrong with being the Polak?
What I'm saying...
Being the Polak?
a 90 averaging pure mid, I mean, it's not like if he's a top 10 keeper, like I'm taking Bailey Smith, man. I'm taking Bailey
When you're in a deeper league, those 90 averaging mids are valuable, especially with his ceiling.
Yeah, Bailey Smith's averaged 9 points less than him in the first year. Take him away, mate. This is why
I'm on ground. I'm on ground.
Now, can I just get rid of a myth here? So it was shared with you guys because I wanted to know who a genuine wingman and who played as a genuine wingman last year and who played as a genuine wingman this year. So we'll do some research. So here they are. And I'm a little bit worried that everyone keeps on saying that wingmen have come a thing. They are a thing. They always have been a thing. But there is a trend here. So we'll go with the main one first, and it's the one that has least experienced anything. And there is part reason for this. But Andrew Gaff scored the same AFL fantasy points this year as he did last year. So pretty much a break even. It's a 0.1 between it. He went down in Supercoach only by a point. So he's the one least affected by this. But Hunter, down 7 AFL fantasy points per game and 7 Supercoach points per game. Tom Phillips, down 5 AFL fantasy points, down 7 Supercoach points per game. Jared Polak, down 5 AFL fantasy points, 7 Supercoach points per game. Isaac Smith, down 5 AFL fantasy points, 5 Supercoach. That is amazing stat, and I can tell you the reason why. It's the 666. So what's actually happened, because clubs can't start with a loosened defence, when you get a clear clearance, you're no longer going wide and trying to find a way in. You go in. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, what's happening is once or twice a game, they are losing the opportunity. Yes, they are the release, but they've got the same amount of people on them. The forwards have got less people on them from when the centre bounce happens. So every centre bounce, they're starting with 6 forwards, 6 defenders, rather than 6 forwards and 7 defenders. So therefore, when you get a clear clearance, you're actually going long rather than the cheapskate way, which was used to go wide to try and create an open space. So the wings, gentlemen, are not a thing. They've always been a thing, but they're not a greater thing. So just be mindful of that when you're drafting. If they are a genuine wingman, they've got a limit to their output. And if you look at Andrew Gaff, there were games where he went reasonably big, but he was spending time as an insider. And that's the thing they did different with Gaff this year. They spent more time inside. The second half of the year he went outside. Have a look at Andrew Gaff's score for the second half of the season, and they were peaking at a ton.
So what you're saying is Dersma's going to really have to learn where to run, because the scoring ability is just not as much freely there anymore, Statesman.
He's as the wingmans aren't going to be the 110 plus midfielders that they could potentially be before. Their ceiling is going to be closer to the 100. Yes. Moving on to number 7, and we'll give this one to Jono because this really is Dossie's boy. 2 tons and a massive one as well. First year of footy, 21 games with 2 tons. That's a ton every 10.5 games. Connor Rozee.
Yeah, see, I would have swapped them around. I'm more of a Dersma fan than a Rozee fan myself. But actually, I didn't see a lot of Rozee this year, but certainly the scores were there. Not as many tons. I'd like to have known what his 85 to 95 scores. I know you won't have that on hand, but I think that's where his range will be. I don't see him being as that top scoring player. I think he's mainly going to be that just under 100 type player, especially if he's playing high half forward type role, pushing into the wing. Doss, I know you're a fan of him. Did he actually get much midfield time this year?
Wouldn't have said much, especially doing the centre bounce attendances. Didn't get barely sighted in the back half of the year.
And I will say, just to compare the two, so compare the pair, that their points for the formula was so close, it was remarkable. So the only real difference that we've actually got is the positional bonus that he gets being a forward rather than a mid next year, because that's all Dersma's going to be, is the mid. That put him just underneath Xavier, because Xavier actually averaged a bit more than him, so he kept him front. The one point that actually put him a 0.5 ahead was the fact that Connor actually scored a score over 120. So that was the difference. So he showed a higher ceiling this year because wingmen are a thing. Speaking about wingmans, and I've known that information for a while, and I actually traded out this player throughout the year, and people rate him extremely highly. But as we're explaining now, there's a bit of a cap to it. So for exchange for this player, I actually got Taylor Adams and Darcy Parrish. Oh, no, that's incorrect. That was Marcus Bontempelli I shared with those. I need to find out who I got in for this player. But 60 games, 8 tons, and 2 scores over 120. So he has got a ceiling, but both of them are 120-something. It's not bigger scores. One of them was this year and the other one was the previous years. But this year, the expectations of tons were probably a little bit lower than what they should have been, and that's purely and simply because of the role. So I actually found him getting a lot of 80s and a lot of 90s. There was actually one stage only a couple of weeks ago where Doss was going absolute burko, because I think he had about 50 by half time, but he only ended up with 102, and that's that. They've got a ceiling. And of course, I'm talking about the suitcase himself, Hugh McCluggage.
Hugh McCluggage. And what number are we up to, Statesman?
Number 6.
Yeah, 6-2 low. The Clugger is, of course, the man.
You want him to be 0.
Fair enough. I was high on McCluggage this year based on the fact that I thought he could become that goal-scoring midfielder. Now, I wasn't certain. I thought he'd be playing a lot more inside, but obviously the Lions factor coming in and him playing a lot more midfield time has pushed McCluggage onto the wing and Barry. McCluggage's been playing that pure wing and playing it really well, and it probably is what you're saying, maybe where he's going to be sitting for the next couple of years, but I do see him moving inside once we see Zorko retire and perhaps Lyons getting a little bit older as well. I definitely see him become an inside mid in the future. Goal kicking was the improvement I saw this year, and that has happened. He's kicked a bunch of goals from the wing. Next year, I just see those possession tallies remaining high for more consistently next year is where I see his sort of ability to continue building the score. The ceiling is a slight concern, but I think he's going to be coming. I see his ability to become that more like a Whitfield type player than I do being not a Whitfield type player, if that makes sense. I see a 110 in his future potentially for Hugh McCluggage. So I'm high. I don't know what you guys are. Obviously pretty high. He's sitting at number 8. What do you guys think of McCluggage? Do you see a 110 in his future with the score build, especially if he moves in an inside mid in a few years?
I think he's capped at a 102 to 104, and because of that wing role. There is a benefit that comes out of the wings being a thing, because off the top of your head, how many times did Gaff, Hunter, Phillips, Polak and Smith get tagged this year?
You're not talking about Brad Hill a lot.
No, because and I went back to Brad Hill. He only played 10 games the previous year. So his actual average was impacted by an injury game. So I couldn't compare the pair. Went back the previous year and he played some flankish type roles. So he couldn't really compare what a full wing year was compared to this year's full, because that's the way I had to do it. So what I was suggesting there is, because of the 6-6-6 and a clearance and a positive clearance going deep long, and therefore a chance for a team to score because they didn't have an extra defender down there, they've actually concentrated the tags on the inside mids. So those.
Well, I know Hunter did get tagged maybe 3 or 4 times this year. That was before Dunkley, McRae, and that went crazy. But they're locking down on him for the Doggies. And who was the other player you said?
Isaac Smith did get a tag once.
Yeah.
But Gaff would have been tagged every single week in years gone by. It was hardly touched this year.
That's right.
Yeah, it's incredible. So moving on to number 5, and this is a dropper, peoples. He was number 2 pre-season, and we all understand because nearly everyone was disappointed with him. But with 50 games, he still scored 9 tons, and he scored 4 120 pluses. So we're talking 50 games compared to Ollie Florence, 1 ton. This has done 9, and it's done 4, plus he's a defender. Which is even
Alex
better.
Witherden?
That's the man, number 5, Alex Witherden.
Yeah, look, I was high on Alex Witherden this year and got burnt. Actually dropped 14 AFL fantasy points this year, so that I'm putting down to the role of Daniel Rich, who went absolutely ham this year. And look, I was backing on Witherden to maintain his score on the back of a Daniel Rich tag or even a Daniel Rich injury, which we know he's been susceptible to both in previous years, but it seems that the tag didn't come Rich's way at all, and he was just thumping the ball outside of 50 ad nauseam. But no, Witherden's a big keeper, and look, Daniel Rich is close to 30 now, and Luke Hodge retiring, so plenty of space at Alex Witherden next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, number 4 is the biggest surprise, but the data doesn't lie. This player has only played 7 games.
I know who it is, I reckon.
Me too.
All right,
and this
gentlemen,
is why you
is
keep
it?
Him in a keeper league, Doss.
Charlie Constable?
Constable, correct.
Okay, Charlie Constable. Number 1 for disposals for players with less than 70% time on ground for season 2019. So he averaged 21.4 disposals in just 68.3% time on ground. Almost a very nice number there. So that was at an average of 82.9 fantasy points with only 68% time on ground. Huge numbers. I tallied the numbers from the VFL this season as well. So he averaged 93.8 fantasy points from 12 games in the VFL. 191 centimetre mid. We see Tim Kelly's probably leaving the Cattery, as everyone keeps saying. Joel Selwood definitely showed his age this year. There's got to be a time for him to come into the midfield. And I'm guessing this is where you want to start the Brandon Parfitt conversation as well, Statesman.
Absolutely. And you've got to boil this down that he's either need to go somewhere else. So it's third year next year. So he's actually a year younger than the other player we're talking about, Charlie. And he just reeks of quality. Now, don't you need to, going into his third season, be starting to give this man opportunities? Otherwise, what does he want to do?
Again, he's playing in a Chris Scott team. And look at the trade talks they're looking at bringing in. Sean Higgins and Jack Stephen. If that happens and I'm Charlie Constable, I am getting the hell out of there.
Absolutely. And opportunities, wherever he goes, he's straight in the midfield. That's the Doggies. The quality this year.
The Doggies! Go to Gold Coast. He'll win 200 every week.
So we're saying, he goes into the midfield, or he gets DPP, mid-ruck, or he finds himself at a different club. Do you like that one? That was good.
So what you're saying, though, is in this data set, the games played is really the weakness in this data set, because we've got Will Brody, who's barely played much in the last couple of years, and Charlie Constable, who's played like 7 games, and he's up in the top 10.
Well, it's the output. So the underlying key thing is ton per game.
Yeah. Just opportunity for these guys, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
And injury. I guess injuries for Will Brody, though. Yeah,
exactly right. Exactly right.
And you see, Doss, I dropped Bailey Smith, but held on to Charlie Constable. He's going to be the winner.
Yeah, cool. and I actually think you're right. Now, we'll say that we are talking from number 21 to number 4. There's only 30 points the difference here in the end ranking. Well, we're going another 40 points ahead. So bigger than the gap between 21 to 4, just to get to our number 3. So we're talking three big dogs coming up.
I know who they are.
Yeah, and it's pretty easy. So let's roll through. Yeah. Number three, 11 tons, three games over 120. He averaged 98 this season. He is scoring a ton every 2.7 games. And if you took it this year, it's basically 1.2 games. And we're talking James Warple.
Yeah, he just completely took that midfield role by the scruff of the neck with Tommy Mitchell out. And look, we actually saw him the previous year scoring not as prolific, but pretty close to it with Tom Mitchell in that team when he had the forward status. Look, going to lose that forward status for 2020, but man, I'm still pretty hot on him. When you've got quality ball users going inside 50 with him, Tom Mitchell and Isaac Smith, I'm actually more excited for the Hawthorn forwards next year than I am more than James Warple, if that makes sense.
So the data signs were here for us. He was number 9 in the preseason. So we're talking, you add this year on and he just shoots to the stars. So the class is there, and I know people saying all about Tom Mitchell, but they're not losing him from the midfield. There's other players that go out before James Warple does. Mm.
Correct.
You have him, Doss?
Jimmy Warps. Sorry, I'm looking up the some research for next one. But yes, I love James Warple. He's a killer.
Yeah, absolutely. So number two, first year of football, and all the data says, fantasy-wise, that this is the best first year ever. We're talking 7 tons out of his 22 games, 2 over 120. He scored a ton every 3.1 games. Of course, we're talking about Sam Walsh.
Yes, Sammy Walsh. Of course, you got to trade him off. Second year Blues, don't want him in your team. No, he's a genuine gun, of course. Going to be there for the mainstay in the Carlton engine room. And it will be interesting because when Teague took over, the centre bounces sort of skewed towards the veterans, of course. So we saw Ed Kernos spend more time in the midfield, Mark Murphy more time in the midfield. And we saw Sam Walsh sort of move more onto that wing with stints in the midfield. So there is actual upside as well for Sam Walsh to be playing more midfield, inside midfield time going forward. Do you guys think he'll be in the centre square more next year or playing more of that outside role? Once again, probably not going to matter because he's just going to be pumping you out some awesome scores. He's a lock in your keepers. Just wondering, next year, do we see him improving from his awesome average this year?
Jono? I think it actually will maintain, might get a slight bump because you've got Doherty coming in. We've always heard rumours that he's going to get that midfield time, but look, he can run all day. He didn't look fatigued at the end of the year. He just got a different role, as you said, Doss. So look, I think he maintains his score, might go a little bit bigger. That's about it. But yeah, certainly a keep for a long time, Sam Walsh.
Absolutely, and it's pretty plain to see who's number one. 55 games, 22 tons. 8 scores over 120. This bloke has a ceiling. A ton every 2.5 games. He is a star. Averaged 113 this year in his third season, the breakout season, and that's Timmy Boy Taranto.
Gee, you just imagine what the Essendon team would be like if they took him at number one instead of McGrath.
Or McCluggage.
Either. It doesn't matter, but no, he is an absolute star. We got a pretty big bump due to some injuries in that GWS midfield to Ward, Kelly, Coniglio, but watching the game, the first final on the weekend, he was in that midfield. It was him, Kelly, De Boer, pretty much the whole time. Look, we know Cogs is coming back. Do they throw De Boer back as a forward tagger and only use him intermittently as a tagger? Because they have to leave Taranto in that midfield. He's an absolute star. Did play a little bit on the outside in the final against the Doggies, but we might get a slight deduction in average next year, but he's an absolute gun and love what Taranto does.
Well, that's the 22 under 22 Dossie boys, so we might get to the questions.
We certainly will get to the questions that the Statesman put out on Twitter. At Statesman33, if you want more advice from the keeper genius that he is. So we'll get on to We Got Big Cocks. and he's got a few tough decisions this keeper season. I think the two ones that he wants to really know about are Toby McLean and Blakely. Should he trade him for picks? That's sort of the big key question that he's asking. Statesman, what do you think?
Yeah, he actually gave us three squads too, and there's one there, the middle team, that he's asking whether he keeps should keep some younger boys or trade them out. So I'll just deal with that bit. In the keeper list, he's actually got Petrarca ahead of Wingard. I'll be trading Petrarca. Yep. Take your pick, because someone is going to be high on Petrarca. Take your pick out of Petrarca. I'm unsure of McLean as well. I'll just go in with one forward, I think, which will be Wingard, and I'll add on a midfielder, being Andrew Brayshaw, who we just talked about. So we're talking the Frio version. I'll be all over him. If that's a keeper, you're keeping him ahead of McLean or Petrarca. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yes.
With McLean, Petrarca, people will be hot. I'm not convinced they're going to get the role, so there might be one burning a hole. Take your picks and get some young guns in there. Again, any decision you make has got to be based on whether you think you're going to win this year or you're building to win. I always go in with the thought process. I take a 12 that includes some stock standard senior talent and some potential breakout players. And as the draft is going, I add in to fill my team first. And by the third round, I'm deciding whether I'm trading to win for this year or I'm trading to build. And of course, like me, I draft so well, I'm always training to win, Doss.
Rancid, next question. Russ Rancid says, I'm disappointed with Zach Fisher, and I'm tempted to delist him. Andy Brayshaw and Chera are both available in the draft. Oof. Although I won the premiership, so they probably won't be available at my first pick. Are there any juicy centre forward rookies that you are keen on now? He says centre, comma forward, so I don't know if he means mids and forwards or mid forwards. Any rookies we are keen on?
Yeah, I think we talked about Shai Bolton. With an average of 66, he might be down the list. I don't think many people are going to keep him. Cam Rayner's an interesting one. We're talking 2 tons in his first season. Means he's got potential. He certainly played a lot better on the weekend than what he's been pumping out throughout the year. But you've got to think their patience with him is going to pay off at some stage. I like Gallucci. Now, whether he gets a mid-forward status or not could be questionable. Only 27 games. You think Adelaide are going to shake things up. So
he's even their other rookie they drafted this year, they pumped out a nice score in his last game, didn't he?
Yeah, Wilson?
No, that's the mature ager. Chase Jones.
Yeah, so there are quite a few options there. One thing I should have said, and this will indicate where your club's at. So this is out of our list of 22, this is what club's got. Geelong, Brisbane and Port all got 3 each. GWS, Carlton, St Kilda 2, and the ones to Hawthorn, Western Bulldogs, Richmond, Gold Coast, Collingwood, Frio, Essendon, none from Adelaide, Melbourne, North Melbourne, West Coast Eagles, and Sydney Swans.
Hey, could this... I think he's a centre forward, or maybe he's just a centre. Is James Rowbottom, would he be a guy you could try and, you know, ditch Fisher for?
I'm a fan, yeah. Fisher in the new coach hasn't shown anything. I'm a little bit worried. I think he's a good outside mid, but I think they're starting to get a lot of class in that area at the club. So it's where his role actually is. So if a Petrescu Seaton's sort of been thrown from the half forward to the half back, then you've got a lot of talent in your team.
I think it's the issue with smaller players going forward. It just seems like with the new setups or something, there's just not a whole lot of smaller midfielders rocking around these days. Like, you've seen Fisher get pushed out, McLean get pushed out, and I mean, those are the two obvious ones that come to mind, but I'm sure there's more going around that we've just seen sort of have to play the more forward roles to really get it go. Anyway, Bagels is a 12-team, 26 players, 13 keepers, 5-7-1-5 league. Would you keep a Dan Houston over Brandon Ellis? Also trying to find room for your boy Perryman in my midfield. I'm leaning towards keeping Pendles over Dunstan and or Miles. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I'd keep, I would trade Pendles if you got the opportunity. Wise got some currency. So we're talking 31 over 32. I wouldn't keep Dunstan and I wouldn't keep Miles. I think everyone's moving on at both clubs, to be fair. They are depth players. I reckon people delist them and they're sitting on the waiver wire until they get picked up. And if you're reading the tea leaves, whether it be injuries or form, when you're ready to pick them up. But I wouldn't be holding on. Brandon Ellis, wait till something happens. So the word I'm hearing is Gold Coast. If that happens, he's just going to be on the outside for Gold Coast, isn't he? And a big yes for Houston. And as we talked about, Perryman's a decent keep.
Well, Houston will definitely lose his defender status this year, spend the majority of the time in the midfield, you would think.
I think only the second half, but I'd have to look at that data, to be fair.
And the final question.
Have I used that gag too often?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
The final question
flogging
comes from
Flogging a dead horse again. Speaking over DOS three times in a trot, can I do it one more? No, sorry.
Stevie goes for about 5 to 10 per episode, so that's all good. Miller Time says, Cam Rayner, what's his fantasy value, if any, breakout year next year? He's wondering, and you've sort of already mentioned this. Like you said, the coach does seem to keep the faith, and I've sort of toyed with the idea whether I like it or not, because you probably, if you were playing in the NEFL team carving it up every week, you'd probably be a bit annoyed that he does get the sort of free run in a way, Cam Rayner, but at the same time, you've got to love the fact that he's sticking by his young talent, and surely it's going to shine through eventually, like you said.
But if he's playing his role, then what more can you do?
Yep, and his role might change to help one of those that you keep when you keep long miss.
Alrighty, well, I think that's pretty much wraps up a long episode for the Draft Doctors, 22 under 22. Statesman will get that article up on the Draft Doctors website. Make sure you leave a comment and let us know who you reckon's got snubbed out. Of course, Paddy Dow's probably going to be commented on there many, many times. He was definite snub.
You need
snub.
To qualify the data is just the data.
He was a monstrous snub. So let us know who you've got in your 22 under 22. And Statesman, any closing thoughts from this episode?
I just wonder, with me doing this type of report, do you want me to base it around who scored more than 40 points and how many games they've done that, just so Paddy Dow could be in the mix somewhere?
The show will go for a week and a half. We don't have that time.
Just swing the document by me and I'll make sure I make the appropriate edits before we
publish. We'll do a
it.
Show, top 22, 40 to 50 average players, perhaps. I don't know.
You're too rough. We'll see you next Wednesday, continuing the off-season releases. Catch you then.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.